You're listening to Awake, a men's podcast by Fellowship Bible Church. Well, hello and welcome back to another episode of the Awake podcast. And we are excited to kick off a new summer series called Behind Closed Doors, a series on sex and marriage. And we're glad that you're with us. We want to open up a space for honest and vulnerable and potentially awkward conversations about sex and intimacy and how it all fits into God's design for marriage. And I just want to say that a big part of this conversation is coming from a place of, we've had a lot of conversations with men around lust, around pornography, and I think we need to have some more conversations about how do we navigate the conversations around sex in our marriages. So if you're married, lean in. If you're single but desire to be married, this is a great conversation for you to lean into as well. If you're single and no desire to be married, you're going to know how to pray for your brothers in some difficult conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for getting us kicked off, Liam. Excited to have on Bob Fulmer as our guest this week. But let's be real. This is a topic that a lot of us didn't grow up hearing talked about that much. In my household, I definitely know that there was never a talk about the birds and the bees, right? And how to approach that, let alone from a biblical standpoint. So I definitely had some struggles through my adolescence and then just kind of created bad habits throughout teenager and then into my early adult years. So excited to be able to provide information for brothers in singleness and married relationships to be able to grow with that and be generational teachers of these things. So we've invited Bob on to help us unpack all this with biblical insight and a whole lot of honesty. So excited to have you on, Bob.
It's great to be here. You know, it's interesting you said, Sean, that we didn't learn about this a lot when we were growing up. But isn't it interesting when you have children, you have a new baby. Mm-hmm. You have children, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We teach them how to do everything in life, how to go to the bathroom, how to take care of themselves. But we don't talk a lot about sex, which is a big deal. It's a big part of your life. And then what happens is we end up going sideways as we get older, like you said, kind of trying to learn things on our own and from society and not from our parents. So it's a topic that definitely needs some good discussion.
Yeah. And it's like for me, growing up in a non-Christian household, my parents did talk about sex with us when we were pretty young. Like I remember conversations happening in second grade where they were telling us like, hey, here's where babies come from. This is what sex is. But obviously it wasn't done in like the context of like
a biblical context.
Right. And so it was just very much like biological. It was like romance. It was marriage. It was this kind of like just kind of general culture understanding.
Right.
So that was school number one of sex for me. And the other was the back of the school bus. And that was kind of the other common place of learning, I think, for
from peers. Who just knew it all?
Lee, exactly. Because we all knew so much about sex when we were on the back of the school bus. But that's like we just kind of gleaned different things about it. But I think there are so many wrong beliefs that we have about it that are still kind of in there in our minds. And then we get married and we start to see those things come out. So that's why I think it's so important that we press into these conversations. Yeah. So that's why for the next 3 months, we're going to be engaging in this conversation. And in this first episode, our focus is what is kind of the foundational beliefs of what does the Bible say about what sex is, its purpose, why we do it, why God designed it the way that he designed it. Mm-hmm. And then the upcoming conversations are really going to be about like, okay, so then how do we actually have conversations about this with our spouses?
Right.
Because that's where I think there can be a lot of stress and discomfort and awkwardness is not when we're talking about it necessarily, but when we have to sit down face to face with our spouses and be like, we need to talk about sex.
Yes.
So, and I'm sure you've probably experienced some of that awkwardness between couples.
Absolutely. I've experienced it in my own marriage. Mm-hmm. And obviously sitting down with other couples, we have that topic comes up definitely. So it is something that needs to happen and it is uncomfortable. People have a hard time talking about sex when we shouldn't. It's part of who we are. We're adults. We should be able to have that conversation. And it's an important part of marriage, as we'll talk about here soon, about how God created it and why he did it.
Yeah, so I say let's just jump in. Let's start from the beginning. You know, I think Genesis 2 is where we begin to see some of the first conversations around marriage, union, and something that is being described as one flesh or naked and unashamed. And the scriptures talk about this, that a man shall leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So what does that mean? Can you help us understand that?
Yeah. So when it says one flesh will become one flesh, actually, when you translate that, it's actually not just flesh. It's that's just part of the whole person. Mm. It's like when you said we took a count of hands in a room. Well, you didn't just count hands. You're counting the whole body of mm-hmm. the person. So when it says become one flesh, it means you're becoming one with their mind, their soul, and their body. Mm. Obviously, physically, you do become one. But that one flesh is all about really becoming one in every sense of every human nature that you have. Mm-hmm. So it's more than just the physical part. Mm-hmm. It's just one way in which they talk about it. And then naked and unashamed is really about being fully known and fully loved. Mm. It's about emotional intimacy. So when he talks about being naked and unashamed, you know everything about me. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is in the garden, at first they were naked and unashamed. Mm-hmm. But once sin got into the world, they began to see their differences. And those differences that were once attractive to each other mm-hmm. became something that now separated them, their differences. And when they made fig leaves and God had to kill animals to create loincloths for them, mm-hmm. they didn't cover their feet. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a jacket. They covered their private parts mm-hmm. because that's the point of most difference. Mm-hmm. And so naked and unashamed really speaks to being fully known and fully loved. Mm.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it kind of makes me even just think about, you know, the intimacy with our wives, right? And how intimate that relationship can be, but how we can even be naked and ashamed within our, you know, our spousal mm-hmm. relationships, and how these conversations can help us dive deeper with our spouses to become unashamed, right? Or to spiritually yeah. and emotionally into that. So then what's the bigger picture then? So then what was God's purpose in creating sex within the marriage itself?
Well, I think God, there's a lot of reasons, I'm sure. The four that come to mind for me is the first one is sex is a gift. God gave, he invented sex, guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that not amazing? Mm-hmm.
It is.
I mean, he invented sex, and he invented it in such a way that it would cause a bonding between a man and a woman, this oneness with your flesh, or all of you can happen in the sex act. Mm-hmm. So it's a bonding agent, okay? The second part of it is it helps your marriage to run smoother. Mm. I think of sex many times like oil in your car,
yeah.
okay? You have all these parts running at a quick pace, very quickly can cause a lot of friction. And if there's a lot of friction, there's a lot of breaking down in an mm-hmm. engine, right? So you put oil in your car to lubricate that and to make it run smoother. There's a lot of friction in relationships, mm-hmm. okay? And sex is one of those ways that can cause it to run smoother mm-hmm. and to make your marriage easier. Mm-hmm. You can have hard times, hard conversations, but if you have this bond between you, mm-hmm. those conversations can be much easier to navigate, okay? Third, of course, I think of is procreation. Mm-hmm. God created sex in marriage so we would have a family mm-hmm. within a family unit, one male, one female. Kids need both a mother and a father. Okay, so he created sex in this area of two committed people where they can now raise a family. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth one, I think of sex as kind of guardrails. 1 Corinthians 7:5, talking about, you mm-hmm. know, you don't want to stray. You want to, you know, your body is not your own. Mm-hmm. He tells the wife, your body is not your own. He tells the husband, your body is not your own. And back then, that was a big deal because
yep.
men basically owned their wives. Mm-hmm. But to say that, and he says, you know, you can refrain from sex for a time of prayer, but be sure to come back so that Satan doesn't tempt you. Mm-hmm. Okay? So it's a guardrail. Having that outlet for our sexual desires and mm-hmm. needs helps protect us from sexual immorality.
Yeah. And I've always found it interesting that I feel like so much of what I did in kind of preparation for this podcast mm-hmm. was just kind of look at a wide swath of the scriptures and the way that they talk about sex.
Yeah.
And nearly every reference to it outside of the book of Song of Solomon was guardrails around sex.
Yes.
Because I think it is so powerful.
Absolutely.
And has both a powerful potential to do enormous good and mm-hmm. a powerful potential to do enormous damage.
Yeah.
And so it was just kind of like jaw-dropping to see how much of the scriptures, when talking about sex, is focused around protecting the marriage bed, guarding our hearts, our eyes, honoring one another.
Yeah.
And so it was just kind of astounding, but at the same time, it seems like there is a book dedicated to the beauty of yeah. that relationship in the yeah. Song of Solomon.
Absolutely.
And that it is, yes, a very it has such a high purpose on procreation and being fruitful and multiplying.
Sure.
But at the same time, there is just a beautiful aspect to just the unity that is there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
God created it so we would have enjoyment
yeah.
and pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just for procreation.
Yeah.
It is for fun
mm-hmm.
and for pleasure. And that's a beautiful gift that he's given us. And in marriages where that's not happening, mm-hmm. I always say it's like, if you get a gift for Christmas, it's all wrapped up and there's something amazing. And I give you that gift.
Mm-hmm.
And then I come visit you 2 weeks later and you haven't opened the gift. I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here? I just gave you an amazing gift. You have no idea what's in this.
Yeah.
And I come back 3 months later and the gift is still not open. It's like, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a gift that God has given us for many purposes. And you're right. In scripture, a lot of it talks about being protective because it is powerful.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to say, I'm thankful you gave some of those, examples, right, of those guardrails. So, like, forgive my ignorance not to just know, like, what exactly you're referencing of, and some of our listeners, okay, what is he talking about within these guardrails, or where can I go find these? That way I'm kind of learning and step with this series, too. But as listening to you guys speak, it makes me think about the desensitized nature that we have within sex, right? Mm-hmm. And how beautiful of this gift is. It's like striking the perfect chord, right? Mm-hmm. That is just the most harmonious sound ever. And it's just like, well, we've just heard that sound again and again. But and that's when the maybe the idea of what sex is, and for myself, right? It becomes a very selfish kind of I want sex for me instead of this unity for my wife and I to kind of create. And I'm sure we'll unpack some of those things, but I just think I wanted to pause and kind of just point out that there is a desensitized huge movement that's in our society for sure. You know, our generation to what even this is going on. So,
And I think that was, and it's one of the passages that you brought up, Bob, is that 1 Corinthians 7 passage. Mm-hmm. Like when I was looking at where are some of like the positive pictures of what sex is supposed to be, not just what it shouldn't be or ways to avoid it. Chapter 7 in 1 Corinthians was one of those. Would you mind just kind of unpacking a little bit of what that's talking about with like your body is not your own and that kind of respect with when it comes to sex?
Yeah, the way I see that is the Apostle Paul's talking to married people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he's telling them that, hey, you know what? Sex is a strong bonding agent. It's a gift from God. And you don't want to hold it and weaponize it against your spouse.
Mm.
Okay. We don't want to withhold those things. This is something that your body is not your own.
Mm-hmm.
It's a part of being married is this bonding. So it's not your own. He's telling this to the woman. And also, like I said earlier, to the man, which was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big line back then to say that to a man, saying your body is not your own. What do you mean? So I think it really just shows the importance and the gravity of the sexual connection that you have, and that it needs to be respected and it needs to be used.
Yeah.
And you don't withhold those things except for prayer.
Yeah.
You know, to set aside time, but you always come back because of your lack of self-control.
Mm-hmm.
It says, so Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. And he's talking to married people.
Yeah. And I think when I look at that passage and then I look at passages like Ephesians 5 that are so specific about what marriage is supposed to look like in the context of a husband and a wife and the roles. And it's so clear that marriage in so many ways is a picture of the gospel.
Totally.
That it is about selfless service and the laying down of our lives. And I don't know how often we connect those dots to our sex lives.
Right.
And what does that mean for me to love my wife like Jesus in the bedroom?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I think that's something that as we kind of are ongoing in these conversations, I think that's where we're going to have to really nail down.
Mm-hmm.
But why do you think, like, let's kind of shift from what some of the testimonies of the scriptures to just kind of wondering some of the things that guys are believing. But first, why do you think guys struggle to want to talk about sex in general?
I think everybody struggles with that.
Okay.
Guys do, though, probably in particular, because to us it seems much more important. Mm. We are definitely, we can look at a woman and be sexually attracted to him.
Mm.
Okay. Whereas women are more, they connect more on a social level.
Right? Typically.
Typically.
Like, yeah.
Not
broadly speaking.
Broadly speaking. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, Yeah, I think it's hard to talk about sex because I think our whole lives we've been told that that's not something we talk about, right? It's something that's very private. Some people are taught that it's dirty and nasty. As Ted Cunningham says, I love him. He says, you're brought up thinking that sex is dirty and nasty, but you save it for the one you love.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, really? Okay. Yeah. So I think we are taught that and our culture kind of has that. In your family, you said you talked about sex a lot. We didn't in our family. Not at all. I learned from movies and books and my brother and my friends in the back of the bus. Okay. So we don't learn or talk about those things. So it makes it difficult to have that conversation because you've been taught your whole life not to have that conversation.
Yeah. And I had friends who, when they got married, like in talking with my buddies, it was like, it was really hard at first because it felt like they were doing something wrong.
Right.
Because they had been, their guard has been up for years. They had been like guarding their eyes, they've been guarding their hearts, they've been avoiding sexual temptation in every way.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you enter into this covenant and all bets are off, basically.
Exactly, yeah.
And let's, it's like, talk. whoa, this feels wrong in some ways.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, I get where you're coming from with that. Yeah. It can be difficult.
And then if you add on to that any child abuse you may have had, or if you've had a number of sex partners before your marriage, or your partners had a number of sexual partners other than you before marriage, that adds another layer
100%.
Of making it more difficult to have that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, like just being 100% honest with you guys, that's my story. Yeah. Having a background of sexual promiscuity in some of my late teen years, it was like bringing that into a marriage, it naturally brings a level of insecurity into those conversations, not just for me, but also for my wife.
Right.
So, yeah. And so that's something that we have had to figure out how to navigate well, and me with grace and her with grace to me for my past. Yeah. And so, yeah, it is just a tough topic.
It is a tough topic. And it's because of all those reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, I identify with that too. Just, it's like we're on opposite ends of the spectrum, my wife and I, in regards to that, you know, and I wish I could take back all of those, you know, those partners. And then you just start to think of like, did I know that partner, right? Or was it just, you know, just a spit in God's face kind of deal to what he was doing and teaching. So that's why I think sometimes we have this burning desire to talk about these things because it feels like they're not being talked about enough. And we just want to make sure that us as fathers for this next generation, or that we can to widespread what we've got going on right now to teach our sons, you know, and imprint them and go from there. So yeah, I love that you use the word grace within your relationship with your wife and in the bedroom, because I have something similar to that in regards to just, it's both ways, right? Onto that. And then even just being married for not quite 4 years now, there's dry spells, right? Or there's you know, there's health issues or there's the child or exhaustion. And so then, all of these things, which we can unpack, you know, next episode with conflict and communication, just a little preview. But it really starts to just grow into this, maybe just a little small campfire that ends up being this bonfire in your marriage if you don't keep it oiled kind of deal. So, yeah.
Isn't it interesting too to see how God's desire is to protect us? The reason he doesn't want us to fornicate is for protection. It's for our protection. It's not because he's a killjoy.
Yeah.
It's no, this isn't meant, this can cause harm to you down the road if you're not careful. So I just loved looking at that perspective of God's desire for us to have joy in sex. But it's like you said, it can start out, fire's a good thing.
Yeah.
Unless your house is on fire. And it's a bad thing,
For sure.
Water's a good thing. You can drink too much water and die of drinking too much water. I mean, anything can be horrible if it's not done correctly.
Yeah. So I want to kind of shift now to thinking a little bit about like, what are some common misunderstandings or maybe myths that men might carry into their relationships or they might believe about sex?
Yeah.
What comes to mind when you think about that?
Yeah. Well, you gave some in you gave me your outline for the podcast, and I think those are right on the money.
Okay.
The first one you mentioned was sex is just physical. Hey, it's just physical. Okay, the dudes, man, we just need a release. That's all. Okay. And that's really not true. Because as we talked about, the first thing we talked about was one flesh is really becoming one physically emotionally, spiritually. Matt Chandler from the Village Church, he says, when couples have sex, there's a mingling of souls.
Oh yeah.
And I love that. It's like, yes, it's so much more. That's why friends with benefits really doesn't work. Because mm-hmm. you do, if you are just having sex for the physical part,
yeah.
you will be jealous if they have sex with another partner. Mm-hmm. You're jealous. It's because it's so much more than that. So it is more than just being physical.
Yeah.
Sex is really that bonding. And what's interesting is if you have sex with a lot of partners outside of marriage, mm-hmm. when you get married, that bonding agent isn't as effective.
Yeah, it's like you've kind of seared a part of your heart yes. that is meant for connection.
Yeah, great way of putting
it. Yeah, it's something that I've thought about that more in the context of like pornography use
yes.
and not just in like sexual partners. Yep. But yeah, I think that is super true that you can get to a point where what is supposed to be an emotional and spiritual and physical right. connection
yeah.
can just become physical to you because you have blinded yourself to the humanity of the other person.
Right. Yeah.
And you're not seeing the union that's being created.
Right. Yep. Which was designed by God.
Yeah.
Is that union. So yeah. yeah. So that's the first one. I think another one is it's my wife's job to take care of me sexually. Mm. And I just chuckle when I hear people say that because I've heard that in
really?
Conversation with them. What's her job? You know, when I say, well, did you hire her to do that? Because if you hire someone to have sex with you, that makes them a
prostitute.
A prostitute.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Does your wife want to be the prostitute? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. That makes them less human. Mm-hmm. And your wife desires to be human. Mm-hmm. So it is not her job to do that. It is your job as a man to create a safe environment in your marriage. Mm-hmm. It is your job as a man to create intimacy mm-hmm. with her and to connect with her on a level where she connects and feels comfortable now with doing that. Mm-hmm. And then you may need to have that conversation. Hey, I need more sex in my life. Mm-hmm. I desire you. I want you. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been married 42 years mm-hmm. today. And
hey, awesome.
Yes,
really?
That's yes.
Awesome. Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. And it's, I still desire you. Mm-hmm. I still want you. Mm-hmm. And that's an important part of that. So it is not her job. It's never her job. It's your job mm-hmm. as a man to lead your family and to lead your wife in that way and to create that environment.
Go ahead. On that one, you had said just it's you know, our job to create these safe spaces, right, mm-hmm. for our wives. What's a way to do that? And what's a way that doesn't do that as well that you've seen?
Yeah, great question. I think it goes back to the naked and unashamed. Mm-hmm. It's creating emotional intimacy. It's you being fully known. If she fully knows you, she can trust you. Mm-hmm. In Song of Solomon, if you read through that, when the king is with his bride, mm-hmm. he doesn't just have sex with her immediately. Mm-hmm. He talks about her beauty and how amazing she is and all the things, the ways he's attracted to her. And he doesn't have sex with her until she invites him into her garden. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this trust that has to be built up in safety. Women need to feel safe. And we can do that by letting them know who we are and being transparent yep. with them.
Yeah. And I think that myth of it's my wife's job to meet my needs is a weaponizing of 1 Corinthians 7.
Totally.
And yeah. when you read a passage, you say, well, you know, my body is not my own, but your body is not your own. It's mine. That I think what should be the focus is on is like, I should give my body becomes you should give me your body.
Right.
And that's where it can become so dangerous. And I think that it may have some of the roots of that myth there mm-hmm. of a misunderstanding of we are going to look at the other person and what they're not doing for me mm-hmm. rather than what should I be giving to
right.
my spouse.
Right.
But, and I think sometimes, and this is something that we'll probably get into more, is there is going to be a difference in what one expects versus what the other expects in terms of sex.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that is going to lead to a difficult conversation.
Yeah.
But to look at it in terms of your job is to please me yeah. or to give me what I need.
Right.
is a misinterpretation of yeah. what 1 Corinthians 7 is intending to make your eyes drawn to.
For sure. It's really, when you become a follower of Christ, the way, at least for me, in my life, the way I saw my wife changed instantly mm-hmm. because I no longer saw her as that person who owes me, who's there for me. You're there to please me. You're there to serve me. Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds terrible to even say that, but that's kind of where I was at mm-hmm. when I first got married, mm-hmm. when I was young, 23. But when I started following Christ, immediately I saw her more as a child of God who I have the pleasure to serve. Mm-hmm. It's a total change in how you see your spouse. Mm-hmm. You don't see them as someone to get something from. You see them as someone you can give something to. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge shift in how you see her, even sexually.
Yep.
In that realm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like when a marriage is working great, both people are trying to outdo the other in serving.
Yeah.
When it's not going great, one might be doing more of that than the other. Mm-hmm. And I think that can build up resentment and bitterness and frustration. And so there is so much in this conversation that happens in a non-ideal way.
Yeah.
And I think that's where conversations 2 and 3 are going to be really beneficial for guys who are listening. Because they might be like, well, cool, like great. This is all good. I know these things are true about sex, but what about when our sexual drive is just not on the same page? Mm-hmm. Or what if there's chronic health issues? Right. Or what if it's just things don't work the way that they used to work?
Yep.
So I think that there is a lot in these conversations that are going to be important. But I want to talk about another myth.
Yeah.
So the next one that I think I hear a lot is that my struggles with lust and porn will go away once I'm married.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I don't think that's true.
Okay.
in a word.
That's
really
true.
Yeah. I think it's true. And again, it goes back to 1 Corinthians 7,
yeah.
5. I mean, he's talking to married couples and saying so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Mm-hmm. So obviously, it's going to always be there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's dealt in porn or with lust knows that oxytocin and that dopamine hit on your brain can cause you then to always want to see more and more, and it's got to get worse and more perverted to hit that brain and to get that dopamine hit, right? Yeah. So I don't think it goes away. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that we struggle with, and we men especially, women do too though, believe it or not, there are women who do struggle with that. But for men, it's something that does not necessarily go away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something we have to stand against and lean on Christ to do that. And through our marriage, have that need met through our wives.
Yep.
So I think it's not something that is a myth. It doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something that can stay with you. And again, if you've been had any child abuse happen in your lives, or if you've been looking at porn, and kids are looking at porn, they say age 8 now, 7 and 8 year olds looking at pornography. Holy cow, their brains aren't even formed yet. And these lines.
20 years ago, that was when I first saw it.
Yeah.
And I was 8.
There you go.
Yeah,
and the grooves in your brain are starting to see that and want to see more. And that does not go away.
Yep.
And this ties back into, when your wife, your spouse, your fiance knows you, knows your past, you know, and knows some of these, the dark areas that she can, you know, check in or shine light, shine grace, like be like example of God's love, you know, I'm going to forgive you for all of that. You're with me. I know you now. I am enough. You are enough. And so those are real life examples of like forgiving and just shedding all of the weight, you know, because then there's a lot of when you bring in sexual sin to a relationship that you feel is coveted, then you just wish you could just shed it all. But then it's like you need your spouse to be like, I shed it, you know, with you. Like I am forgiving you of all of that, you know, and being able to, you know, because then conflict happens, right? A year into the marriage or whatever the case may be. And then we revert back to things that maybe are our scar tissue. So just always being known by your wife and just being on guard and being married for a couple of years or 40 years, it doesn't change Satan's plan to want to tempt you for your lack of self-control under that. So
great point. Yeah. That's a great point. That's something that continues to go on. And it's something you got to be on guard of. And I think being transparent with your spouse is really the key to that one. They got to know, you know, my phone, Luann can get into my phone. She can get on anything. You can see, I'm not on any social media, so I don't have any of that, but she can look at anything and she knows me. So that helps to protect it, but it is that grace that comes into play. There's got to be a lot of grace and forgiveness. If couples get good at forgiving, you're going to have a great marriage.
100%.
There's no way we have a relationship with our Heavenly Father without forgiveness. Yep. Without that forgiveness formula, it doesn't happen.
You said something in Merge, right? That sticks with our marriage. That's like have a competition to be the first one to forgive.
Yeah,
right? And hopefully you're not doing it often, right? Like, you know, but and Jess and I will say it to, hey, be the first one to forgive, be the first one to love, be the first one to come to me and be like, that's my bad onto that, you know? Yeah. And so it's just like, just that's so much grace for sure.
Even on the little things, mm-hmm. you know, the crunchy peanut butter argument, you know, I wanted crunchy peanut butter. You got creamy or whatever. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm so sorry. Will you forgive me? Mm-hmm. So that forgiveness model needs to be, and if it's part of who you are and part of your marriage, it will definitely play a role when it comes to sex.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. And I think that is another, myth or misconception when it comes to sex is like sex in marriage kind of sits in this own little corner by itself. Mm-hmm. But it is, every part of your marriage is so interconnected.
Yeah.
And you can't neglect one part without another part being affected by that. Like mm-hmm. if you're not emotionally connecting with your spouse, spiritually connecting with your spouse, it's going to have an effect in the right. bedroom, 100%. And totally. Vice versa.
Absolutely.
I think if sex is an area of struggle, you're going to feel an emotional distance. You might yeah. even feel a spiritual distance. So yeah. there's so much harmony needed in all of these yeah. areas, which I think is why it's so complicated.
I think so. And I think it's interesting because in the Greek language, love has four definitions, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Well, one of those is eros, yep. erotic love. Mm-hmm. Storge, family, phileo, friendship, agape, committed.
Yep.
Marriage is the only relationship where all four of those are present. Mm-hmm. So without eros, something's lacking. This mm-hmm. erotic part of our relationship is lacking. That causes a strain on your marriage.
Yep. Right.
If the friendship isn't there and you're having sex, but you're not really emotionally intimate.
Laughing.
Yeah. You're not laughing, having fun. It's lacking. There's no commitment. That's mm-hmm. the problem. And there's all these things. So you're right. It's a very complicated thing. And and what's interesting is like sex, it makes up maybe, I think in Merge, we talk about it's 0.67% of your day or of your week
yeah.
or of your life. It's a very small percentage yeah. of your time, mm-hmm. but man, the impact it has on your relationship
for
is,
sure.
huge.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is another misconception. It's like, if we're not having sex all the time, something must be wrong with our right. marriage.
Yes.
And I think it is an overinflation expectation
yes.
on like the prominence of sex mm-hmm. in marriage. Yeah. And obviously there are times when, it's not happening enough to the point that it is causing issues in mm-hmm. a marriage. But I think sometimes there is a misalignment of expectations that can cause some of those issues
yeah.
I think that there is just not enough conversations around sex. And so people don't know that every marriage looks really different. And yeah. it doesn't have to look the same way for every single couple.
Mm-hmm. Right. What is enough sex? Well, it yeah. depends on the couple.
Right.
I do Symbis assessments with premarried couples. I've done over 60 of these things.
Yep.
And it ranges. And they'll say, you say, what's your expectation for marriage? And it ranges from one time a month
yeah.
to every day.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever works for you. It's different. It's really dependent on the couple
yeah.
and what they feel like is the right number to have sex. Mm-hmm. Now, if you are not having any sex and you're both healthy, mm-hmm. there's no reason why you shouldn't be having sex, mm-hmm. then that can be an indication there might be something going on mm-hmm. with your marriage. That's a red flag to me. Yeah. If I'm talking with a couple, one of the questions I ask them is, what's your sex life like?
Yep.
Are you having sex regularly? Are you having sex at an amount or a number of times that you're both satisfied with? And if it's like, no, we don't have some, as a matter of fact, we're not even sleeping together.
Yeah.
Okay, that's red. There's something going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, and just, before this podcast, I talked to my wife. I was like, what are you okay with me talking about? And she was like, I'm an open book. I don't care.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I feel like we're different than I think. And maybe I'll speak mainly for myself. I think I am a little bit different than a lot of guys. And like, my sex drive is not that high. Mm-hmm. And so we had a lot of conversations about that early in our marriage and even in Merge to be like, okay, so yeah. frequency wasn't a big sticking point for us because my sex drive just wasn't super high. And I think there a part of that was, I think in some ways, just a long running addiction to pornography, I yeah. think did damage
right.
Some of my heart, my mind in the area of sex. And so I think that there has been a long healing process. Mm-hmm. But I just, in that respect, I don't often understand maybe some of those issues that other guys might have with frequency and infrequency mm-hmm. because it's just, it isn't as big of an issue for me
yeah.
and for our marriage.
Yeah.
But I know that it's true. Yeah. I know that guys have much higher sex drives than their wives, and the libido or sex drive differences can cause a big issue.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's just kind of I'm at.
Yeah. And you know, that's, we can unpack that too, because very similar with me too, to where I'm sure there's me and a lot of guys that have that same feel about sex that have just damaged, you know, that with it, you know, and so there's a lot of healing that needs to happen, and have a hard time of vocalizing that to our spouse and say, this is where I'm, you know, or even understanding where you're at internally, like why I don't always just want to kick in the door, you know, when I get home and, you know, have sex with my wife onto that. So I think just being able to talk about it and having a platform, a safe space here, like we said at the beginning, and then being able to hopefully have these, our awake groups, let be safe spaces too for these guys to be like, here's where I'm at with my wife and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping these conversations that we have can people feel how comfortable that we can talk about these things and they go from there. But just to say, getting on the same page and having ongoing conversations with your wife, that way she knows where you're at in this season of I'm just kind of just exhausted, you know, mentally from thinking about so many things that I'm not kind of feeling it. And maybe she lets you know, you do need this, you know, really, we need to connect. I need you, right? You know, kind of deal. It's like, I need you to make me feel good. And, you know, and hot and whatever the case may be, right? So there's that aspect of it to where, and, you know, it's like I had a question written down why it's so hard to be, you know, why we have so much selfishness to when we're practicing sex. And maybe you can unpack that a little bit. But that's when us as husbands have to recognize that there's a, you know, another person who needs that, and God created that for us too.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of guys think that sex is just about physical stuff. Mm-hmm. Shanti Feldhahn wrote a book called For Men Only and For Women Only. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. And for women only, she did a study and asked men, if your wives were to give you sex anytime you want it, but kind of did it reluctantly and just out of duty, would you be sexually satisfied? And 74% of the men said no.
No way.
They're not sexually satisfied. Yeah. They're physically satisfied, but not completely, because men desire to be desired.
Yeah. Yep.
More than anything, I want my wife to desire me. Mm-hmm. That's why I go to the gym now and hurt all the time. I'm trying to still say, you know, hey, look at this. I'm still got it. You know? But it's part of that thing that we desire to be desired. And women need to be cherished. Mm-hmm. That's the number one thing women desire, is to be cherished and desired. And so that's an important element when you talk about sex in marriage, is having that desire for each other. It's just not the physical part.
Yeah.
You know?
But I do think that is a part of the reason why sex might be a more prominent thought in guys' minds in some ways, is because that physical act does communicate, I desire you.
Right.
And so
In our minds.
Yeah. Right. And that's where communication and conversation is so important, because to your wife, she might love you, desire you, want you. Mm-hmm. But if sex isn't happening, you might be hearing something completely different.
Right.
And so it's just, we got to lay it all on the table. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It all has to be out on the table.
You know, it's fascinating because, again, Shanti wrote a book with Michael Stysma, who's a sex therapist. It's called The Secrets of Sex and Marriage. Mm-hmm. And in that book, she talks about initiating desires and receptive desires. Most men, 70% or so of men, have an initiating desire. Mm-hmm. Which is, I can see my wife come out of the shower with a towel on, and I'm ready. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Okay? A receptive desire is, I don't think about sex at all. But if we start fooling around, my desire for sex comes right up to where the initiating desire is. Mm-hmm. And that is such a fascinating insight, because for so long in my marriage, I thought that I wasn't desired because I'm always initiating.
Mm-hmm.
But in hindsight, I'm thinking, but every time we would have sex, we would both enjoy it. Mm-hmm. You know, she would get to that same level. So it wasn't that she didn't find me. It just wasn't her. It wasn't in her makeup.
Yeah. And not that.
So true.
I don't know if I'm, you know, not that I'm exposing my wife that much. And she knew we were talking about sex, and we did. But
that's why I asked permission.
Yeah, I did the same. 42 years married. I asked for permission.
And she listens too. She's so good. But she will like, hey, you know, let's schedule something for next Thursday at 5:30. Does that work for good for you? I'm like,
so good.
I How about I just randomly bring it up and we can just kind of go from there, right? So I think me planning sometimes, I feel like my wife is a planner. She likes to make sure, hey, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
You're ready to go. I'll make sure everything's, you know, cleared the schedule.
Beautiful.
And I'm more like, hey, I just walked in. Awesome day. Let's rock and roll it. You
yeah.
kind of know. She's like, I'm not ready at all. You know,
yeah.
it's like, we're going to burn. So sometimes just
that's
that you come back to, that communication aspect, being able to have these conversations.
That is a great strategy, though, is to actually, because when you have children and jobs and things going on, you are busy. You are tired. You are exhausted. And they are. I mean, stay-at-home moms are exhausted.
Mm-hmm. And they're touched constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly. And what? And women communicate verbally. They like to talk and communicate with this, you know, with language. And if they don't feel affectionately close to you, that's not just not going to happen. So planning it. Mm-hmm. And if you're of the receptive desire type, oh, wow, I'm having sex on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's pretty good. You can kind of start ramping up. It's like, this is going to be all right. This is going to be good. Mm-hmm. If you're an initiating desire, you're like, Friday's the night, man. This is going to happen. If for some reason it can't happen or something gets in the way, you schedule the next time. You go, hey, not tonight, but tomorrow.
Yeah.
You have that date. But that's kind of a different topic.
Yeah.
Or not a different topic, but a different angle to what we've been talking about.
Yeah. But I do think that that is, like, there are definitely different camps for marriages in terms of, and I think some of it is maybe informed by media or just feelings around sex. Like, sex should always be romantic. It should always start with dinner and candles and music, you know, and all this stuff. And it's like, and then if everybody's feeling good, then it might lead to sex.
Yeah.
And you have kids and schedules get busy and you gotta, you gotta fight for date nights in the calendar. And sometimes sex just needs to be scheduled as a part of your marriage.
Foreplay starts in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You treat your wife with kindness and with patience and with love. And you treat her kind throughout the day and you listen to her and you emotionally connect with her. This is all foreplay. You can't expect to have none of that in your marriage and just come home and, hey, let's have sex.
Yep.
That's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
That's going to feel like it's her job.
Yeah.
Right. So foreplay starts, I tell guys all the time, foreplay starts in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
When you wake up, hey, baby, how's it going? Did you sleep well? What do you got planned for the day? What's going on? Give her a kiss before you leave to go to work.
Yeah.
Come home from work. It's so good to see you. Tell me about your day.
Yep.
How are you doing?
Mm. Yeah.
Non-sexual
touch as well throughout the day.
Yeah. Exactly. Actually, that's it.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, if you think about it, that idea from like a spiritual connection, it's like, you don't just wait until you feel like pursuing the Lord to pursue the Lord.
Absolutely.
You're not just waiting for the right moment where the birds are singing and the sun's up before you're like, okay, I really want to sit down and spend time with God. No, we know that in a lot of ways that the discipline is a part of what can fuel and nurture that flame of desire over time and foster a deeper connection with the Lord.
Yeah.
And yet we expect that sex is going to operate on a different level or in a different way. And it just is not, we don't see it as as sometimes like a discipline in marriage.
Totally.
To foster a healthy relationship.
I like how you equate it to God's pursuing of us and us pursuing Him.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a sometimes thing. It's an all the times thing.
Yep.
You're right. We're always pursuing Him. We should be.
Yes.
We're not.
Yes.
He is always pursuing us, but we're not always pursuing Him. That's a great point. I like that.
Yeah. So I kind of want to wrap up this section of our podcast with this last question. And it's kind of drawing us back to Ephesians 5 and that marriage is really a picture of the gospel.
Yeah.
And if that is true, what role do you think sex plays in portraying that picture of the gospel?
That's a great question, because I think marriage is a picture of the gospel.
Yes.
Okay. In so many ways, like we've talked about. I think one of the ways that I see sex specifically and how it ties the gospel is that when we, in the end, the gospel, the whole design of the gospel is for us to have a relationship with Christ.
Yeah.
Right? Ultimately, or have a relationship with the Father through Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, Christ marries His church, right? In Revelation, we hear about the groom preparing the bride, preparing us for marriage. Well, marriage is becoming one. There's a oneness of mind, body, and soul that become one. We're going to become one with Christ.
Yep.
That is the ultimate gospel. That's the end of the gospel story. That's the happy ending of that story. We are one with God. I love it. Tim Keller in his book, The Meaning of Marriage, and I wrote this quote down because I wanted to say it exactly mm-hmm. what he said, but I love what he says here. He says in his book, The Meaning of Marriage, he says, quote, "Sex is a foretaste of the joy that comes from being in complete union with God through Christ."
Yeah. Wow. I just got to like sit with that for a second.
Let that just kind of hang with you a little bit. Sex is a foretaste of the oneness we're going to have with God through Christ. Mm. That is a big deal. That puts sex in a whole different thing. Mm. His book is in the section is called Glorifying Sex, the Glory of Sex. Mm-hmm. And I tease, you know, I say, hey, every time we have sex, we're glorifying God. Mm-hmm. We're glorifying him. And Luann's like, don't you ever say that to me again. I don't want to hear that, okay?
Not the most romantic line.
Not the most romantic thing. That's, I don't want to put those two together in the same room. But it is an interesting concept. And that, going back to what we very first talked about, becoming one flesh, it's this bonding agent between mm-hmm. where you actually become one with your spouse. We're going to become that same oneness with Christ and the Trinity. Mm-hmm. You know, that puts us above the angels in heaven. They can't do that. Mm. Only us created in his image will have that happen to us. And that to me is the connection of sex with the gospel message.
Amazing. Yeah, Bob, I just really appreciate the wisdom and honesty and vulnerability that you bring to this conversation. And I really do think that this can be such a strong impetus for great conversations for marriages in our church. And yes, this is a men's podcast, but I really hope that men and their spouses will connect and engage around this conversation.
It's critical.
The groups that are meeting around this podcast will encourage one another to have these conversations with their spouses.
For sure.
But that's kind of where we're going to go next time. Right, Sean?
Yeah, no, that's what I was, we kind of alluded to it a couple of times just with next month, we'll be talking about communication and conflict in the bedroom. So sex is awesome when you're having it, right? And when all systems are firing and there's oil and gas in the car and you're running a turbo motor and the horsepower is going, baby. Uh-huh. But there's times when, you know, you forgot to change the oil or, you know, there's something wrong with the car, right? And you can't quite figure it out. So, and I definitely know that, you know, this one hits home to us sometimes with certain things. So communication and conflict is what we have in the bedroom. And I'm sure you've got a little bit of insight on that.
Sure.
Some successes and failures. So looking forward to having that segment next week.
Yeah.
Sorry, next month.
Next month. Yeah. So Bob, thank you again
thank you
so much
for
being on the episode and helping us navigate this difficult and sometimes awkward conversation.
Absolutely.
But hopefully having it more often helps it to become more normal. And hopefully guys will be able to bond over the struggle, but also encourage one another in the good pursuit of a healthy relationship around sex in their marriage. So guys, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Awake Podcast in our series Behind Closed Doors. We're kicking the door open. We're inviting everybody in to have a conversation about the topic of sex. And so we look forward to being back with you next month for our conversation on communication and conflict in the bedroom. But make sure to keep an eye out for the email that comes out when these podcasts release, because there will be downloadable PDFs that have extra resources, book recommendations, links to articles, and different supplemental resources to help you as we have these ongoing conversations. But again, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Awake Podcast, and we will see you next time.